Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation, heard at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. W420RadioNetwork.com. Time now for the lowdown on another high time experience. Here's 420 lifestyle correspondent Rich Walkoff.
There are many advocates for medical cannabis, but none more compelling and compassionate than our guest today, Matt Grimshaw, founder of Vets Grow, teaching veterans with PTSD how to grow cannabis, tied in with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Matt, thanks so much for your time. And I guess when you look at the struggle for so many veterans, over 500,000 from Iraq and Afghanistan dealing with PTSD, and so many places that cannabis is not legal, I guess that's where you come in, huh?
Well, yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. Mainly it's about trying to help veterans normalize more than anything else, because cannabis, I've seen personally, it brings veterans back to some state of normality as opposed to the regular stress they've incurred, especially combat veterans through their service. But it's more than that, because cannabis has a very long and complicated history through the scheduling in the 70s by President Nixon that causes veterans some very, very specific problems. Because while it's been legalized in many states, as we all know, that doesn't change the federal Schedule I status. And because veterans predominantly rely on the Department of Veterans Affairs for healthcare and many, many other services, it basically cuts them out of the loop, because of cannabis is still Schedule I. The VA is still a federal entity, and as such, they can't even talk about cannabis use as an alternative to opiates. And so at the moment, what we tend to have is an organized government-funded infrastructure that pushes pharmaceuticals onto veterans, whether they want it or not. And I'm determined to try and create an alternative for them.
Well, that's awesome, and I think a lot of people would be in your corner and saying, look, they paid the ultimate price. Some never came back. Some came back with psychological wounds and physical wounds, and if cannabis can be of help to them, what's standing in the way of that? Well, you talk about it, the federal ban. Now, the Veterans Cannabis Group, which you're allied with, the legal and medical advice that they provide, that is so instrumental. So talk a little bit about how you've teamed with them and what they're doing.
Sure. Well, the Veterans Cannabis Group was the first veteran organization that paid any attention to me. I called all of them when I first had the idea to make a documentary about teaching a veteran to grow cannabis. And he was the only guy that took me seriously. He's an Iraq War veteran himself, and coming from California, he'd always been around, you know, the cannabis culture. And so when he got back and found he had PTSD, he started self-medicating to deal with his own symptoms. Then friends started helping, and he started the group off his own back in order to advocate and educate veterans like him on the alternatives of going straight down the opiate path, which we all know has caused a lot of the suicide epidemic we see around us. I mean, the very idea of giving someone that's, you know, in a very suicidal state a drug that clearly says may cause suicidal thoughts on the packaging is just ludicrous to me, but that's against the point. Now the Veterans Cannabis Group is trying to expand over the course of last year and this year to more and more states, especially the states where it's still completely prohibited, on a mission of education. They have a brand new event that's coming up on the weekend of the 29th of February in Sacramento. It's free for veterans to come to, and that's basically an education event. It helps them deal with issues with the VA, healthcare, all of that sort of stuff. But really, again, it's veterans are a very independent bunch of people. And all they want really is to get their independence. And cannabis really does help them from that perspective, because it's an instant solution to a trigger problem. Whereas, you know, any pill you're going to take is going to take at least 30 or 40 minutes to activate. And so cannabis is the solution if they're in a spot and they have a PTSD event and need help there and then. I don't think I've seen anything else.
Yeah, now you have been working with Dr. Larry Bedard, who is a Marin County ER physician, and you're a medical science consultant. He is a Navy veteran, and he spoke of, in a recent podcast that you had presented, of the 2017 American Academy of Medicine and Science conducting 10,000 studies that verifies the substantial evidence that cannabis is helpful in treating chronic pain, sleep apnea, nausea from chemotherapy, PTSD, muscle spasm, insomnia. The list goes on and on. Yet you're fighting an uphill battle to see the see cannabis being changed from a Schedule I drug. But maybe the influence of veterans and veteran support groups like Vets Grow and like Cannabis Vets Group can be a catalyst to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first mission for any group that's trying to help educate the country about cannabis is education, is showing what cannabis is, what it isn't, and dispelling the fears that are associated with it. And I think veterans are uniquely placed to do that because they're the last bipartisan group left in America. I mean, both Reds and Blues want to help our veterans. And so I see veterans really as the sort of first through the door guard that can prove what cannabis can do to help with a lot of mental issues, but also a lot of physical ailments, chronic pain, sleep issues. That's something I personally use cannabis for, to get to sleep in the evening. But also, you know, the CBD creams, the muscle spasm creams, all of it's a revolution in healthcare for veterans. But they all find themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place because they're forced into either paying full price for it, which, as anyone in California knows, is extremely expensive, or relying on the VA, who cannot even recommend cannabis. I mean, they can't even talk to you about it. Dr. Larry was the gentleman that really educated me on the history of cannabis, because he was in the Navy in the 60s when they actually were writing the drug rehab program. And he built Marine ZR system, for what I understand, and Marine General's emergency room. He's now retired, but he still works on the Marine County Board of Health. And what he doesn't know about cannabis, you can write on the back of a postage stamp, really. It's all of the reading he's done, all of the educating he's done, for my own perception, has been very much to create the image that we're on the start of a very long road to acceptance. I mean, for instance, he told me that I think it was 50 or 60% of ER physicians are suffering burnout and using opiates, and some are addicted. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd much prefer my doctors to sparking up a joint as opposed to popping a whole bunch of opiates to deal with their own stresses. So this is a problem that's veterans are a means to an end. They show what the problem is and how cannabis can help the solutions. But the problem itself is far-reaching, way beyond that. So first responders, doctors, anyone in a very stressful position really could use cannabis to help deal with those circumstances. But veterans are just, I think, the best and quickest way to help because of the bipartisan nature of their support.
Right. Now, Matt, you're a documentarian and you went around the country speaking, meeting, and teaching vets how to grow cannabis. Tell me about your experiences, how it would vary from the so-called blue states to the red states, where in the red states, in most of the country, it's still verboten, and in the blue states, far more accepting. But we have this great dichotomy in this country that hopefully will be bridged soon.
So it's a very, very complicated matter. I worked with a couple of lawyers as well on Vets Grow in order to try and understand the issues myself. And it's almost a week-to-week problem with regards to what the laws are. Because the only way that the states that have legalized cannabis could push it through is to allow the counties to back out if they wanted to, which is why you get places like Marin County, where I live, that doesn't have a single dispensary outside the medical industry. We're forced to rely on deliveries. But one thing I learned all around the country is cannabis is seen very differently depending on what state it is and what culture that state has. And you can literally cross the county line and go from being legal to be completely busted. And there's lots of stories of veterans who try to grow their own doing this same thing. I personally think that anywhere in the country, it should be a veteran's right to grow their own cannabis, because the relationship a veteran builds while growing their own medicine is very, very different to just your typical grower. They really do take it on and nurture it a great deal. So I've lost track of where I was going with that one.
No, I was saying that how different it is in the southern states, in the Midwest, versus the East and West coasts, where you have a more open and accepting, you know, culture and community.
Yeah, it definitely, it does split very likely along the political spectrum lines of right and left, as you'd imagine. But that's generally due to lack of information available in a lot of the prohibited states. So several of the new states that have joined up to the Veterans Cannabis Group are from prohibited states, like Texas, for instance, and they have the unenviable position of, first of all, trying to get their locality on board, then trying to get their state on board, let alone the Fed. So what, it's only a handful of states. I think it's five or six now that are still 100% prohibited, 38 that are now medical, and the rest are recreational, including DC. But I'm now seeing stories saying that the current administration is going to try and push back on that and turn around the massive gains we've made. So this is a very important year for anyone that cares about cannabis legalization and helping veterans, because the two are tied at the hip.
Yeah, and with more than 20 veterans a day committing suicide, the opioid addiction, abuse and epidemic, alcoholism, depression, anxiety, anger management issues, divorce, rage against family members and friends in fits of despair. I mean, we can chronicle them forever. And if cannabis is a remedy, how awesome would it be to see a uniting of left and right, Republican and Democrats, to look for the better futures and lives of those who fought for our freedoms, to achieve that in a healthier way through cannabis?
Absolutely, but I'd take it even one step further, and I think it's in the country's national interest. And I say this as a freshly minted citizen of just 2 years now, but it's in our complete national interest to change this legal situation, not just to help veterans and everyone with mental illness, but if you look at all of the wonderful pharmaceuticals that could come out of it, if you look at all of the wonderful side products that could come out of hemp, hempcrete, polymers, all of this amazing research, because cannabis is still Schedule 1, the fact is the National Science Foundation can't even research it. They can't touch it. In fact, one of the companies I bumped into in my veteran travels, I think called Biopharma Research, they're based in Monterey, and the CEO is an ex-Navy SEAL, and he's trying to get pharmaceutical grade cannabis pushed through at the federal level, and he doesn't want to quit. And everywhere I've turned, veterans seem to be this key to changing the perception of cannabis in the public's eye, from, you know, the atypical van full of stoners just going, whoa, dude, and eating pizza, to the reality of the situation, which is what, the fastest growing demographic of cannabis users is senior citizens. And they're finding out that all of the stories they've been told over, what, 80, 100 years of prohibition are lies, flat out lies. And they're, you know, a secondary demographic I think could change the image. But really, it's veterans, for me. They've paid into the system. We owe them a debt of gratitude. And so I personally think we should be getting the hell out of their way and letting them smoke as much cannabis as they really like. Why are we even making this a question? But it does have all sorts of knock-on effects. Like, there's issues with medical, apparently in some legal medical states, if a veteran gets a medical card, then they can no longer carry a firearm. And if you're a veteran in this country, you can probably understand that's quite a big deal. So veterans are both this necessary pool I don't know the best way to put it. Veterans are this group that we both seem to love and ignore with equal measure here in the States. But they're also a group that is fundamentally American. I mean, what is America without its veterans? They're the ones that have set the tone and executed executive policy for whichever president has been in power. And most of them don't, you know, want that much gratitude. I've tended to find, you know, thank you for your service doesn't fly very well. What they want is help. What they want is interaction. What they want is to be part of America again, instead of being this subclass that's viewed as an accountancy line bill by most of the people that are in power. So cannabis is a It's a key to many, many other subjects to do with veterans, but it's the one I think that starts the conversation best, because it just helps. I mean, all you have to do is find a veteran that's used cannabis for PTSD and they'll tell you. Don't take my word for it.
Yeah, so they can be literally the tip of the spear to hopefully bring about the federal legalization, because it would be so beneficial to so many, not just veterans, but they're the ones who get acknowledged more readily when they come forward, either talking about their service to the country or in uniform and saying, look, this is helping me.
Right.
And perhaps through the change in the banking laws, or the MORE Act, with the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, the Safe Banking Act, the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act. These are before the House or have passed the House and could be going to the Senate. Well, there's no better way to get acknowledged in the Senate than if you're in uniform or telling stories about your service to the country and needing this cannabis to help make your life better back home.
Right.
So Matt, thanks so much for your time. If people want to reach you and learn more about Vets Grow and what you're up to.
Yep. You can get me directly on my website, which is thedocumatarian.com. It's DOCUMATTARIAN.com. Or you can see me, go to the Monster Gardens YouTube channel, or you can just go to YouTube, type in Vets Grow, and that'll bring up the whole series. And then you can see for yourself how cannabis helps veterans. I basically spent the whole of 2019 making a 9-episode documentary series where I taught a Vietnam veteran called Al up in Sonoma to grow his own medical cannabis completely legally with a legal team and a medical team. And what you see online is the result. And now I'm trying to create sequel works to try and help more veterans around the country, especially in places where it's prohibited, to change people's attitudes about cannabis.
Well, as if I can borrow the phrase, thanks for your service. Matt Grimshaw, founder of Vets Grow, Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network.
When winter comes, or the clouds, more night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. Let's say hello to an expert, Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He is the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Everybody knows that indoor grow is more challenging, and then again, it can be more advantageous because you can control the ecosystem and your environment.
A word for indoor ag or indoor growing would also be controlled environment agriculture. And, you know, that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to control and provide the best possible environment. Far and away, LED is the best source to provide light for plants to grow. They're more energy efficient. They use less wattage, and they provide the same amount, if not better light, than high-pressure sodium, metal halide, and other traditional light sources. They're more of a broad-spectrum light source, so they're providing light within the photosynthetic active radiation wavelengths really more broadly than your traditional light sources. They last longer, and they're traditionally more reliable than high-pressure sodium, metal halide, and, you know, those types of light sources.
I understand it can reduce grow time up to 30%. They can last up to 50,000 hours. They are more durable than fluorescents, and they emit less heat. It's like a no-brainer. And I understand that Franklin Energy is giving consumers an opportunity to capitalize on LEDs if they want to upgrade their lighting system. So tell us what's going on.
Franklin Energy runs and implements rebate programs for utilities all across the country.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. My email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
Welcome back to The Conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis Correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It is a pleasure to introduce AC Moon. She is an innovator, 20-year-plus cannabis infusionist, master cultivator, consultant, contributing author for Grow Magazine, teacher, judge at the Emerald Cup, and named International Business Innovator of 2020 by the International Association of Top Professionals. This year, she's a guest speaker at the Women in Cannabis Expo, and she also is the founder and owner of Crop Tops Greenhouse and Harvest Moon Munchies. Hello, AC, how are you?
Hi, Chase, how are you doing? How's everybody doing today? Thanks for having me.
Of course. So great to have you here. You've been in the industry a long time, and I was wondering, how did you start?
That's such a backhanded question for me. I grew up in the industry. So I would say that I was born as a second generation legacy farmer. I had a lot of background with prohibition, of parents that were survivalists and bikers and things like that, you know, out in the woods. My mom was a firefighter and she had cancer. And when I first was out into the world, pretty much surviving on my own, living on the streets when I was a teenager, I joined the advocacy groups and found myself really learning what the purpose of our energy is in advocacy, and went and found my first job down in San Francisco and, gosh, in like 1999, and started working at the cannabis clubs way down in the Bay. And then shortly after, became a supplier for them and went on to a world of doing 1,000 other things in cannabis.
Yeah. And you're an old timer, even though you're probably one of the youngest old timers out there.
Yes, it's true. It's super true. I call it like that, you know, my whole life has been a career in cannabis, like my entire life, lifetime career.
Yeah, truly. And I wanted to ask you, you have experienced so many facets of the industry. Can you let our listeners know some of your certifications that you have that are, you know, involved in the industry?
Certifications alone, I have a pretty broad expansion of education in general, as well as certifiable and verifiable certifications. I really love educating. I love educating myself and regurgitating and tenuring all that information out into the world. I really love, you know, the science aspect of it. So in my nights where a lot of people are probably drinking a beer or something, I'm normally educating myself. So I spend my time smoking a joint and cramming my mind full of stuff. So at this point, you know, I have degrees in horticulture. I'm certified in CGMP. I'm certified in IPM. Certified in FDA, OSHA, HAZMAT, ISO, Sigma 6. I'm a certified master grower, and also I am a patented innovator with 21 micro patents and 17 trademarks.
I do not know. Hats off to you, AC. I do not know how you find the time. Is there any of those patents you want to mention to our listeners that they would recognize or are pivotal, or are they just proprietary for the processes you're doing for your companies right now?
My first invention was, a lot of people that have been in the industry are familiar with Northern California industry, rather. High Times and Emerald Cup is where I launched it. And I am the inventor of croptopsgreenhouses.com, which is an instant pop-up portable greenhouse that protects plants from storms and used as a quarantine for pest management, isolation, and tissue culture. And so that in itself has 21 micro patents on it, which means that 21 different aspects of it are federally protected as intellectual property.
And you started that in 2012, correct?
Yes, I started inventing in 2010 after dealing with some serious federal raids and really realizing that the industry was changing at a really rapid point, and that if I didn't, you know, evolved, that I would dissolve. So I went ahead and sold my dispensaries and cooperatives that I had at the time and started inventing. So it took 6 years and I finally got my patents in 2018.
Congratulations. And you've been growing ever since. I mean, in every sense that you could possibly grow in the cannabis industry.
Absolutely. I've been cultivating cannabis for 23 years now. Harvest again, gosh dang it, after some storms, just did a woozy on everybody.
I know you went to college at Humboldt, but are you in Grass Valley? Where are you located?
I am in Grass Valley right now. I've normally had property in Trinity County, Humboldt County, as well as Nevada County. I'm a trifecta resident of California. I'm born and raised here. And so all those home bases that I've created, right now I'm cultivating my 40 acres near Tahoe, and we've been dealing with a lot of forest fires. So I've definitely been over in this area since I got back from the Caribbean.
Wow. 40 acres.
Oh yeah.
How many?
A lot of work.
Beyond. How many variants would you say you're carrying right now?
Right now, I always think of variants. I keep thinking of Delta, like Delta 9, COVID-19 variant.
I should be using that terminology right now.
Right now, I have cultivated the same cultivar, which is Goo, which is branded Grizzly Goo, G-O-O. It's Afghani cross that I have been cultivating for 21 years. I've had the same mother going for 19 years.
Wow.
And so I also am doing some gas and fuels, which is, I believe it's birthday cake, which is a pretty standard cross cultivar right now.
You have another company, Harvest Moon Munchies, that you also started 20 years ago. Please, tell our listeners a little bit about that. What do you offer through that company via consult or product or what have you?
Well, I've merged all my companies at this point in time. Is I just got back from the Caribbean and I own IndicaInnovations.com. And so Indica Innovations International, I've taken the concept of when I first started cultivating, going to college many, many years ago, I started Harvest Moon Munchie Company. So in 2001, I started creating organic infused edibles. My mom had, raised me off grid, pretty much teaching me how to cook confections, any type of homesteading, breads and creating everything from scratch. So growing everything in your own yard, it became really easy for me to learn infusing at a very, very young age. I was already doing that in my homesteading life, kind of with the DIY, type of versatility in life. And so when I first started infusing, I saw a lot of cancer patients down in the Bay Area where I had, my mom had cancer. I was dealing, I had several friends that had HIV at the time, many different types of ailments from multiple sclerosis down. And I had a serious grudge against the pharmaceutical companies, the massive amounts of drug addictions that were going on. I had friends that were grinding up pills and snorting them. And I was like, what is going on? I was really young and I'm kind of the redhead with a mission. And I was, found a way to make, just a little bit of chocolate changed people's addiction to pills and people's addiction to everything. So I used Harvest Moon Munchie Company through the entire prohibition years as a distribution point for large amounts of infusions, so all organic edibles that, I would highly concentrate for medical use that pretty much was a high enough THC value to battle the opiate addictions and other addictions that were going on at the time, as well as help remediate some of the pain that the actual patients were feeling. And so I had a real passion about that. It kept me going. You can read about it in Cannabis Conversations. I think there's a couple other books that have the story of my entry into it is a passion for trying to help with cancer patients and trying to help everybody else.
So, what a great movement. And, fantastic that you have pursued this for the benefit of all.
Yeah, unfortunately, later on, my whole family passed away from cancer, and I continued through the people that I interact with, the patients, the people later on became innovators, everybody that I realized was, in pain. I became like a passionate advocate, a motivator, a self-expressionist for cannabis, and really want to, just combine the skills of homesteading and back to earth and show people how to save themselves through plants and save our mentality and save our planet through all of that.
I'm sorry to hear about your losses.
Hey, everything that happens to us makes us who I am. It makes us all who we are. So all the negative in your life, it creates today, and today is beautiful. So I'm grateful for everything.
Oh, that is beautiful. I wanted to ask, you know, what else are you seeing that's different from when you started? I mean, I know the industry has boomed and thrived, but are there some things you could really pinpoint and pick out that have changed just so drastically since
in the United States?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, the whole thing is really completely a different aspect of things. As I have been consulting in several different countries, you know, I just got back, like I said, working in the Caribbean with people that barely get paid $2.25 an hour. They're semi-exploited to be into the industry. It gives a really different perspective against the grassroots of what California industry has been. And California industry originally, you know, we were built off of the hippie movement, off the grassroots, off the back to earth movement, or people were just supplying their own. And through supplying our own, we had a community of trade and, you know, trade and commodity, barter and trade was really the grassroots of our entire American culture and many other cultures, as a matter of fact, you know, our trades of goods. And so that, you know, obviously became a commodity, which is now blown out. So originally we had this really amazing community of people that were advocates that had passion because, you know, when you had the balls to go out there and risk your freedom, to risk your kids' freedom, to risk everything that you had to be a part of this movement, you're a different person than the person that's walking in into the CBD movement now. That's like, I have my dad's money and I'm going to go create a tincture. You're a totally different person than the person that was fighting and running from cops and hiding from helicopters 20 years ago. And so when I see how the industry has changed and how my community has really changed, I mean, a lot of people are more in poverty now than they've been in forever because of the overtaxation, the lack of equity and ownership and the ability to enter the legal cannabis space. Myself, as a federal raid victim, as also a legacy grower, I can't even afford to legalize my own land right now because I am so overgrown. And then on top of that, there's just legitimately no money to be made in the industry in a lot of ways right now for anybody in California because of the overtaxation. And because of the overtaxation and people's desperation in order to gain footage in the industry, and this is true in all the countries that I'm working in or consulting in, is that the community starts getting shattered because everybody has this need. They see themselves going broke. They can't afford to do what they need to do or innovate their lives. And so therefore, instead of communifying, you know, they kind of start competing.
Yeah.
And that competition starts kind of dissolving the community more and more into where, you know, you have to be really attentive and conscious of the fact that we need to stay connected, even though we're taking this outside investor's money to keep going. And we're all kind of, nobody's any better than the rest. Everybody's on the level playing field right now of semi-screwed.
I think most of America, you know, idealizes this cannabis boom without realizing the facts you're saying, that when you're in it, it's not all glory and money.
There's absolutely not.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a myth that's happening. And it's slowly becoming, you know, the truth is coming out. Do you know of any advocacy groups that you personally work with or help to keep the community going?
Oh, we have many up in Humboldt and Trinity County, Northern California in general, Nevada County Alliance, all the different small alliances that have gone on up here. I've really, you know, even Santa Rosa has a really great alliance. It's just that, you know, grassroots community people still fighting for craft farmers, still fighting for the small people. And right now with all the acquisitions going on and the amount of poverty that's gone on in the systems. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I went international was to try to help the medical movement with advocacy and building businesses in other locations that were there at the same space that we were 20 years ago. And trying to navigate that is amazingly hard because of the exploitation going on in every corner of the world.
Yes. And globally, who are the countries behind us that are the closest to getting completely in the game?
Oh my gosh, there is so many at this point. Uruguay, Paraguay, there's so many. There's now cannabis cultivation in Africa and Venezuela, Panama, there's so many that I mean, soon a lot of the people don't understand that when we enter this space, you know, it's an agricultural space, it's a commodity space, or it's a food space, and it's an infusionary space, or it's an ancillary marketing space. So a lot of people want to see, as we were just discussing, that cannabis is kind of this high point. They want to be involved because it has the glamour of being a culture, a whole culture behind it. And that community culture is being shattered by that glamorification and that centralization of what it is. When really, you know, a lot of my plants got broken from a storm last night. You're half covered in mud. You're working your ass off 14 hours a day, or you're standing in front of a stove doing infusions, cooking cookies, you know, or you're standing in front of a computer for 15 hours a day. No matter what you do, you're going to do it just the same as you do anything else. So be prepared when you enter this industry, because you're doing all that. And when you get to the nitty gritty facts of it, it is federally still illegal that the people touching every aspect of this plant, every aspect of oils, any type of THC down to a drop of it, you are federally breaking the law. So if you don't have an ounce of rebellion in you, you probably shouldn't try to gain entrance into the community. Yeah. Because you're not on the same wavelength of thinking. We're trying to innovate our government by standing this rebellion strong. And so I really ask people all over the world, if you want to enter it as an advocate, and then make business a secondary thing, because otherwise this won't work.
AC, and with that, our time is out. I want to tell you what an honor it is to have you on here as a grassroots old timer. It's really been amazing. And thank you for all your insight going 20 years back. And for our listeners, if you've missed any of this great interview with AC Moon, you can go to W420 Radio Network and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Sun is the source of all our living things, but when winter comes, or the clouds come, or night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. We're talking with Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He's the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. We're getting a lighting 101 from you, Joe. I'm learning so much. The business energy assessment that you provide to growers, no cost. Tell me more.
It's a great program through Xcel Energy. We have a team here in Colorado that collectively has over 20 years of experience in the cannabis industry, in the controlled environment ag industry. Xcel has hired Franklin Energy to really give growers free advice on how to save energy. So we are free consultants. So we go into grow facilities and take PPFD, light intensity measurements. We measure VPD for growers. We take all environmental measurements, and then we go ahead and provide growers with a report that has recommendations for not only energy savings, but also optimizing growers' environment so they can increase yield and whatnot. So again, that's completely free. Xcel Energy pays the bill for growers' free consultants. And typically it takes a couple hours. We're in and we're out. And then, you know, we give you that really good report that is going to provide recommendations for how you can save money and help out your bottom line. We look at all cultivation equipment within the facility. So like you said, HVAC, dehumidification, airflow and fans. We'll look at your control systems, right? And then we'll make recommendations either how to tweak those systems to perform better now, or recommendations to potentially swap out that equipment for more efficient equipment. And on top of that, we will provide energy savings calculations for all those recommendations and estimated rebates for what you might receive by moving forward with those recommendations. On top of that, we're available to really help growers and hold their hand through the entire process of an upgrade.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers, and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. But to get information fast, my email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
And that's Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. He's a Jedi. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network, americascannabisconversation.com.
Well, here we are at the Emerald Cup, and you never know who you run into. Sun Mutialu is a plasma physicist?
Correct.
Something I've never even heard of, but here you are in the cannabis mecca in Northern California, kind of sneering at some of the commercial entities that are abounding here. So why don't you dive right into the core of it? You are an advocate for sun-grown cannabis.
Correct.
But many of the products here are not.
Well, yeah, they're not. I think everybody's trying to do sun-grown, and certainly the Emerald Triangle and the growers that are here are doing extremely good work, for sure. And they should be, and they're world-renowned for that. But I think where I'm addressing, we have a technology called the Sun On Demand, the sunondemand.com. And what we are doing is doing biomimicry. So in essence, instead of doing our own science, which we feel is anytime you're doing anything against Mother Nature, it's resistive farming. You're resisting Mother Nature. Very much like the Army Corps of Engineers that has projects, you know, everything from New Orleans to whatever, that Mother Nature just clears out in one day, right? Because they're fighting Mother Nature. And it's the same kind in growing. However, as the current industry, 80% of the legal cannabis business is indoors. So where do farmers here at this beautiful Emerald Cup go? What do they do? How do they compete? When you have someone like Mike Tyson, even with 150,000 square foot in the middle of Palm Desert, you know, doing that, how do you compete against that? And so the reason we're here, we're a sustainability, wellness, and emerging technologies company. We integrate sustainability, wellness, and these emerging technologies to do biomimicry. So our goal is, how do you create Mother Nature indoors? And the reason we would do that indoors for this group is it's pretty simple. It's hard to imagine this, but we can pop seeds underneath it. They can do their genetics. They can harden their plants. You get 60% more root mass, more microhairs. You get more internodes. The plant is hardened. Right now, people use a fluorescent light, or they use other things to not only pop seeds, but there's no UV. There's no infrared. So the plant can't develop its immune system as it does in Mother Nature outdoors when you pop a seed. So we provide that. Also for overwintering, keeping your mother nice and healthy. How do you do that when you don't have sun in the winter here? So our goal as a company is to give these farmers, these beautiful growers, a leg up by allowing them to have hardened plants, or allow them to do R&D in living soil. And with our technology, we can do living soil, complete living soil, polycrop, regenerative growing indoors, because we have the full frequency of the sun. We're like 50% even more cheaper than LEDs. LEDs don't even include any UV, UVA or UVB or infrared. So we provide that, and we provide it at the exact spectrum of the sun. And this allows full expression genetics. It allows you to grow land races, because we can change to any latitude and longitude the light spectra. We work with NASA to come up with what that is through a partnership. So our goal basically is to bring land races back, to bring the plants that are that really have matured in the cannabis space and help local growers either breed between, go once back with their beautiful and keep some IP for all the work they did in their family, or to be able to take whatever they've got and if they want to compete in the open marketplace with the cakes and the OGs, at least they have all the compounds out of that plant. So maybe they have the high THC, but they also have all the other compounds.
So have you mastered the art of fooling Mother Nature?
No, I don't think it's a fooling of Mother Nature.
Replication.
I think it's emulating. We're emulating. And the beauty of that is that, and unlike other companies that come into this space, the lighting companies, somehow get to guess, oh, it needs blue, or it needs red, or I turn this one off and then I can add this. Well, you know what? The plant hasn't told it. The plant isn't talking. It uses frequency. And frequency has to be what the sun does. And at different parts of the grow, it uses different frequencies, but combinations of frequencies as well. Like if you think about the Emerson effect. So you want to bring full bioavailability of the sunlight. We're not so arrogant as to say we figured out, dialed it in, and now we can do it. No, we just provide whatever Mother Nature did. And whatever Mother Nature is doing, we just provide that, and the plant gets to decide at any given moment in that growth cycle, from all the way from seed, by the way. We can start these plants under our technology and seed, go all the way to flower and beyond, just like they do outdoors. And that allows you full expression plants, the most great medicine, IP. It allows you to have, to heal more people, to get more veterans off of opiates. It allows you to help children that have cancer and. So our goal as a company isn't to sell units, it's to get more plants out. And of course we sell units to do that, but that's not really our goal. Mm-hmm. Our goal is, how do we do biomimicry? How do we align with Mother Nature? How do we give you an efficient technology that you can use? Because some of these farmers have places they can't afford to pay the electricity to have indoor lights to do their overwintering. Our light does 100 square feet per light with 1,000 watts at 4.5 amps. That's like a hair dryer, you know, like a wife's or your daughter's hair dryer. So now with that, you can protect your, so it's 50% more efficient than LEDs. And if you do it in an indoor grow, I cut the air conditioning in half. So now you've not only got economic savings, which you can do, and in fact, when we've designed some rooms, they actually pay for the light before they even put it in, because of the fact that the infrastructure's been cut in half. So our goal is, again, going back, I keep going back to Mother Nature, I keep going back to the plant. Our viewpoint is always from the plant's point of view. And if you do that, and if you do it with Mother Nature, and you do biomimicry, you're going to have those ladies, those beautiful lady plants, are going to flourish like you can't believe.
Because they believe that your lights are essentially the sun.
It is. Yeah, not essentially, it is, exactly. And the reason we developed it for solar cell development, we know this. We're a go, no-go for solar cells. You can't very well take a solar cell flight above all 14 atmospheres and measure it and come back and have a viable business. So we had to develop this to do a go, no-go and test on solar cells. So we know it's the exact sun and it's fusion, just like Tesla. So it's exactly the same.
So how does it compare with conventional lighting for indoor grows?
It's cheaper. It gives you full expression of your plant. It reduces your PM. It reduces your nutrient. But it increases water, which is a negative for us. But that's because the plants are growing like crazy. And we can take 1 week off of veg in about maybe 5 days, 3 to 5 days, depending on the strain off of flower. But we don't recommend that because you want to keep plants in flower. But that gives you an extra grow at the end of the year. So who makes the best benefit of this? Well, the investor, because he's got a differentiator in the marketplace. He's saving like crazy on his electricity bill. he's allowing to be the strains that he's pushing out there are full ensemble effect plants or entourage effect plants, and they differentiate in the marketplace because they're not only grown in 23% of the sun spectra, which is what HPS is or LEDs. And so not only do you save electricity, you get a hardier plant, you get quality plants, you differentiate because you're growing maybe a landrace, Hindu Kush, right here. So in Leafly, if you were the only one with Hindu Kush, don't you think you'd get some notoriety? Now, the argument that I've had from people is, well, that's not what the market wants. They want cake, and they want OG. Well, you know what? If we grow that like Mother Nature, you're going to get more compounds. Even if you get that high THC, you're going to have a kick-butt product.
And the CBD component would be enhanced, too, the way you're describing.
Oh, yeah. This is good. We're doing in Wisconsin right now, working with hemp growers, so that they don't have a loss factor, because they have to grow a significant amount of acreage to be able to have a sweet spot of product, because they lose it from neighbors, from bugs, from plants, all kinds of other issues. But by us hardening those plants before they go out there, the immune system's already built. There's no lag period. So the plant goes directly from indoors within 1 day to 2 days, depending on strain, it's acclimated to outdoors. Where the other way of doing it is you go from a T5 to a this light to that light, and then you cover it with a sailcloth, and then you put it out. Because you're just stunting that plant by sunlight.
Yeah.
But if you start with sunlight, if you pop your seeds with sunlight, if you harden with sunlight, and then take them out when they're teens, which is what we are able to do because we have the sun indoors, gives you one leg up. A big leg.
So you have healthier, hardier plants.
Yes, and more profitable. Because everybody can make money now, right? And the smaller grower can protect their genetics so that they can have a boutique product that people come and talk to them about that has all the compounds, and particularly trichomes. Let's talk trichomes for a minute, right? That's where the beauty is. You don't have UV, A or B. You don't get good trichomes. It's just like an apple. You know, you have any idea if you go to a local grocery store right now, when that apple was picked? You have any idea?
Could be weeks ago, right?
No, 11 months. It left the tree at 11 months.
And it's gassed?
It's gassed. It's full of chemicals to make it look.
And it doesn't taste like an apple.
It doesn't have the nutrients, which is what we're doing to the cannabis right now, by doing these artificial grows, by adding artificial components, by using salts, by adding NPK, you need.
What's NPK?
Well, that's the nutrients levels that you add, sodium, phosphorus.
Now, are you a pioneer that is getting a following, or are you bucking the tide?
Oh, I'm definitely bucking the tide, and I'm disruptive, because you only know those things you've experienced in life, when you have something come in that's new. So let me give you just a thought about that, and it's a little hard. Sometimes in life, what you cannot see is probably the most important thing. So the examples would be air. We take that for granted. We don't see it, and yet we live by it, right? There are other things in life that we do not see, atoms. We don't see there's a connection between us and the plant. We don't understand there's an energy that all of us are one, that we have to rely on each other, that we have plants that are relying on us, and we rely on those plants. That's what that's what an ecosystem is. And so, in the case of lighting, in the case of sunlight, what's more important than the things we see from our eyes, the luminous lights, which everybody uses as PAR, photoactive reactive, because they think it's only photosynthesis that a plant does. Total and unequivocally, no. It does lots more than that. But every plant does photosynthesis. That's why they're plants. But what happens on the other end of things that you cannot see? UV, infrared. Infrared, you're going to find heat. We're not talking heat here. We're talking about circadian rhythms. We're talking about developing certain metabolites. We're talking about getting the full expression of all of those CBD compounds that are in that plant. And we think we're doctors, that we can just extract something, mix it somehow with our own self, and think that we know better than that plant, and we don't. That plant has secondary compounds that all work in concert to create that medicine. When you take RSO, you don't pull out certain, just, oh, because you're serving cancer. You don't have, we don't, I mean, we're learning, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of great work done in Israel and the States. And farmers learn, but it's really, even though anecdotal, because that plant hasn't told us, and every day we're finding a new compound. How do we know what those things interplay is? You don't. So instead of doing that side of it and trying to train it, let's just give it Mother Nature and allow the plant to do what it does. Instead of trying to train it and force it, just for money.
And how is your science manifesting in your cultivations? Are you growing unique plants and products?
Oh, absolutely. One of the beauties of this is that you can take land races. Now, maybe somebody's not going to buy Hindu Kush because they're not my age. You know, yeah, I grew up in Berkeley and Hindu Kush. If I get some good clean Hindu Kush right now, I mean, you know, we're growing it now in Canada. But the old school guys, baby boomers and such, understand that, what those land races are. A lot of the buying public right now, they want cakes, they want OG, they want high THC, they want all that. And I'm not going to argue whether this and that is right. I'd rather have them do that than alcohol and, say, opium, right, or some other chemical drug. So I would say that doing a unique land race, finding one that you've done the XY, I mean the chromosome work to know that that is actually that. Now you've got a particular strain that you've worked on in your family, or you've, this is coming out, everybody loves it. Cross it with that once, cross it back, and go pheno hunting. Now you've got this beautiful landrace genetics matched with yours. Get the kind of pheno you're looking for. Then take that one and do either seed, which I prefer, seed to seed, rather than tissue culture, rather than clones. Because you don't get a taproot when you get, and a plant with a taproot is completely different than something that has, but you're taking a clone. You don't know your, and you have genetic drift. With our technology, when you have a mother that you've used over and over and over and over and clean, and you're so afraid to take it outside because you might catch something or a bug might come, because it's your livelihood as a small grower. What we can do is bring that genetic back indoors under a real controlled atmosphere. So now you can have your lady back. And every time you clone, you're not going to lose genetics. It's not going to have that drift. So now you have to look for something. So to answer your question, it's a long one, is that I think you can create IP by taking a land race that has similar attributes that you know the genetics has gone over time, a significant amount of years. Cross it once, cross it back, maybe do it a couple of times to get that phenotype you want. Now, with a phenotype issue, it's more clones. You're doing clones. But to seed the seed, everybody's afraid because they don't know what that seed has gone through. And I don't know if I can keep my genetics going. And the issue isn't the seed. The issue is what's coating on it. So we developed an atmospheric plasma. Rather than being in a vacuum where plasma exists, just like the sun, it's in vacuum out there, so it's a club. This thing allows us to have atmospheric plasma. So right here on this table, I can just have a ball of plasma. So what that allows me to do is to clean everything organic off that seed. So I can kill the viruses, I can do all that, and continue to have seed to seed.
Where do we find your new lighting products?
TheSunOnDemand.com. TheSunOnDemand.com. And our company is Azentive, AZENTIVE.com. Azentive.com. That's the wellness sustainability. The Sun On Demand is one of the leading technologies we have because we're, again, wellness sustainability and emerging technologies. So we're always looking at biomimicry. So that's our goal. Not just sell something, but something that's going to help and actually assist Mother Nature in helping with the satient beings that we so rudely put into these big grows as though they're robots. I want to help those ladies.
Well, appropriately named, Mr. Sun.
Thank you very much.
Physicist, you're a champ. Thanks for joining us here on W420 Radio Network. Rich Walkoff here at the Emerald Cup, Santa Rosa, California.
Thank you very much.
W420RadioNetwork.com.